Welcome to this edition of the Pepperdine People Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Gibson. This series captures some of the outstanding learning and outreach opportunities available here at Pepperdine. Each episode features interviews with exceptional members of our community and the special people who visit our campus.
Thank you for joining us for episode 35 of Pepperdine People. I'm Michael Williams, and I'm joined today by distinguished visiting scholars Jake Jacobson and Rhonda Jacobson. Jake is the distinguished professor of church history and theology at Messiah College, and Rhonda, his wife, is also the director of faculty development and professor of psychology at Messiah. They're co-authors of several books, including Scholarship in the Christian Faith, Enlarging the Conversation by Oxford University Press, and most recently, The American University in a Post-Secular Age, also by Oxford University Press. Jake, Rhonda, welcome.
It's wonderful to be here.
So tell us, what brings you to Pepperdine?
We're working on a new project at this point in time that's related to the two books you mentioned. We received a grant from the Lilly Endowment 2 years ago. And for the last 2 years, we've been going to colleges and universities around the country, and we've been talking to educational leaders in different capacities about what's happening with regard to religion and spirituality and even questions of meaning and purpose on their campuses, how they're handling those things, and what kinds of programs they're developing.
And then we're at Pepperdine in order to bring our thinking together after doing our research and discovery project over 2 years, and we're starting to write the book that we hope will be finishing about a year from now.
Terrific. Well, we're so glad to have you here. It's wonderful to interact with you and with the ideas that you are bringing to the table. One of the questions that I have is about your new project. Both the books that I've mentioned earlier are really related more to universities, to higher education and faculty members who are engaged in scholarship and who approach that from a Christian point of view. It sounds like your new project is a little different, maybe not as university-focused, but more based more broadly on religion and culture. Maybe that's not true. Tell me more about your current project.
It has perhaps a broader background in changes and developments in the culture at large and the role of religion or how religion is seen, how visible it is in society. So, for example, 20 or 30 years ago, religion would have been less visible in public life in America. It tends to be more visible and more accepted today, but that's changing the climate and culture on different campuses. And this book will focus on colleges and universities, but the whole gamut. We've talked to people from community colleges, we've spent time at Harvard and MIT, and everything in between. So it really is about higher education. And what are the questions that the current generation of students are asking, and what are the kinds of resources they need to be leaders and just intelligent citizens in a world that is increasingly aware of the religious diversity that characterizes not only America, but the whole globe?
About 15 years ago, the very well-known scholar George Marsden wrote a book entitled The Soul of the American University, where he observed and described the secularization of the American university, where in the 19th century and into the 20th century, there had been an assumption of Christian principles undergirding many universities, public, secular, private, and religious. And that in the latter part of the 20th century, that was lost. Our anticipated title for this next book, which may change, we're not promising this, but right now our working title is The New Soul of the American University. And what we're describing is a university interaction with religion that is broader than Christianity, but where Christianity is part of the conversation as well.
And let me just say one thing about why it's we consider it a great honor and opportunity to be working on this at Pepperdine, because Pepperdine, in many ways, combines the best of church-related colleges and universities, where religion is still present on campus, but Pepperdine is also striving to be a leader in higher education at large, and your student body is very diverse. So it seems like a sort of perfect place where all these kinds of concerns come together in one institution. And it's, again, a lovely place to be.
It is a lovely place to be. And certainly those conversations that we are able to have here are beneficial to our entire community. As you said, it's a very diverse group. But one of the things I appreciate about your book is that you avoid the two extremes that are so common in this conversation. One is the almost, you talk about it as a warfare metaphor. You know, we have to go back and recapture the university for Christ. And on the other hand, you avoid the extreme of complete separation of religion from the public conversation. So in your work, you seem to explore this comfortable or maybe uncomfortable middle ground where we're able to have conversation about religion in a public setting of the university. And we're supposed to do so in ways that are provocative and helpful. Talk to me about what you learned from your research about how we can have those conversations in a way that lead to positive outcomes, not just missing one another in conversation.
I'm going to let Rhonda answer this question, but I want to say something just at the beginning. In many ways, we do try to be what we would call radically moderate, which is almost an oxymoron. But so much of the public political conversation is conversation from people at the extremes, and it just is not helpful, and it does not get to the real issues or real questions we need to address. Colleges and universities do not have that luxury and should not allow themselves to be caught up in the rhetoric of either the far right or the far left. All those voices need to be present. But where genuine conversation takes place is when people back off from their more extreme views and try to understand the views of another and try to have an actual conversation with someone. And that's the kind of stuff that we are, in fact, trying to encourage.
I will just add to that one of the things we're working at thinking through ourselves is the many different ways that religion is present on college campuses, simply because students are present and because educators are present, and these are human beings who have their own customs, their own beliefs, their own affections, and all of that is wrapped up in religious perspective, but it also affects scholarly thinking. Mm. And so trying to figure out how those intertwine and describe it in a way that is comprehensible is a challenge and fun.
Absolutely.
One of the things, too, that helps us is that we write these books together, and we're different people. Rhonda is a psychologist. She was a high school guidance counselor for a while. She's a teacher. She's an administrator. She works with faculty. She's worked with the community. So that brings one set of perspectives. I'm more of a typical ivory tower, probably, scholar, faculty member. A lot of the work I've done recently is on global Christianity and global religion in general. So we bring different resources and different talents, different ways of hearing what's going on, different ways of assessing it. And writing it together keeps you honest and keeps you from going off on your own tangent. So we really like working together because we think it strengthens the final product quite a bit.
One of the sad but true stories about our working relationship is that our very first heated argument was over the relative merits of a philosophy major for Jake and a psychology major for me. Now, that is really a sad story.
Yeah, I guess there could be worse things to argue about, but that is unique, no doubt. Jake, you mentioned your recent research in global Christianity. Last year, we had Philip Jenkins here, who's done a lot of work in global Christianity and the rise of Christianity in the global South. I wonder if you could comment on the impact of those trends, the rise of Christianity in the global South, on higher education and how those two trends might influence one another for changing the way that we see church-based education in North America.
I think Philip Jenkins is a very fine scholar and has written a number of very good books. He talks about the Southernization, the move south of Christianity.
Right.
I tend to think and talk a little bit more in terms of an emerging flat world, in the same sense that Thomas Friedman uses that of Christianity, where North America, Europe, Latin America, Africa, Asia all have very important things to contribute to the global conversation of Christianity. I think it's connected to higher education in two ways. One is, Christian or not, it's important to understand that Christianity is the largest religion in the world. A third of the world's population is Christian. And if you're going to understand other parts of the world, you need to understand that there is Christianity in those parts too, especially in Africa and Latin America now. Christianity is a huge influence. It cannot, it's impossible to overemphasize it. And so people studying anything globally or internationally need to be aware of religious matters. Of course, Islam is also very important. Islam is almost a quarter of the world's population now. So studying any and all of our religions and cultures and global perspective, I think, is enormously important. For American Christians, especially, too, understanding the questions and issues that other Christians face around the world, I think, helps put our issues into perspective.
Right.
And makes, hopefully, it will help people back off from some of the fights that we seem to think are so important. Looked at in global perspective, they may not be of all that great significance.
I think that relates to what students are asking for in higher education, is to become globally aware. So I think that when you talk about the place of religion in higher education, it does relate to the fact that religions are not just coming through the prism of North American culture, but it's religion coming through a global perspective. And that makes for a much more complicated conversation than we've had before.
I think I love the way you phrase that, how complicated the conversation becomes. And you mentioned this in both of your books, how difficult it can be simply to talk about religion. And I appreciate in one of your books you introduce us three terms that may help us talk about religion differently. You talk about public religion, personal religion, and historic religion. Perhaps you can say a few words about how these three ideas of public, personal, and historic religion help us to converse about religion in higher ed.
What we're trying to communicate is that simply lumping everything into this religion category and not distinguishing between different uses of the term can sometimes have people talking past one another. So when we talk about historic religion, we're talking about communal religion, communities, traditions that are longstanding. Public religion can be present in worldview conversations where you identify your own particular religious worldview. And it also relates to civic engagement, loyalty to country, nation, the big picture of how we connect publicly. And personal religion is how a person expresses religious convictions, religious perspectives on character, what feeds into personal character. So sometimes personal religion is equated with spirituality, but I would hope that we could also identify personal religion with deeply communal religious traditions. So it's not either spiritual or religious, but an interaction of those two.
And part of the reason we use religion in particular, that word, mm-hmm. A lot of people in higher education are much more comfortable with spirituality, that terminology. But often spirituality is intensely private and personal and in the moment. And of course, that's a huge factor for all of us. All of us want our faith or our values or our religion to be meaningful to us in the present. But religion is also something that's been handed down generation from generation. It's embodied in communities, and that communal context and that cross-generational dynamic really, we think, enriches or has the potential to enrich the kinds of conversation that make up religion. And so we'd like to make sure that we don't like the separation between spirituality and religion. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people say they're spiritual but not religious. But that in the United States, that's a very tiny percent of the population. When they try to distinguish between religion and spirituality, usually you find something like a 75, 80, or 85% overlap in the people who are describing those themselves in those two ways. So most people who say they're spiritual also say they're religious. And most people who say they're religious also say they're spiritual. We just think they're different parts of this whole package of what religion is. And we don't want to separate those out falsely because, again, it means that the conversation will not be reflective of what's really going on in the world and in people's lives.
Right, right. You talk about the role of tradition. In fact, you use the term tradition-enhanced learning. That's a term that was new to me, and I found a really helpful way to talk about these ideas. And in that conversation about tradition-enhanced learning, you introduced this term traditionalizing and how traditionalizing is an important part of what church-based education engages in. Talk to us about the process of traditionalizing, what that means and how that can benefit church-based education.
What we are hoping to encourage is something that's already been going on, in part because of the leadership of Pepperdine University across the academy, and that is helping particular churches, particularly strands of Protestant churches, identify what their own strengths and contribution might be, and to be able to articulate that in a way to say, this is something that we're nurturing on behalf of our community in order to contribute to the larger academic world and to the common good. So it isn't an us against them, my kind of Christianity versus the rest of the world, but here's what my community is specially nurturing, and we're offering it as a gift for the common good.
Mm. Let me add one or two things to that, too. One of the things that we think, good education can happen in many different ways. But especially for kids who are undergraduate age, traditional undergraduate age, one of the best ways of learning what you yourself think is to be able to bounce your ideas off of some other coherent understanding of the world. And one of the great gifts that religious traditions can give to higher education is to allow students to have something to bounce their ideas off of. It doesn't mean that schools, church-related schools that understand their own tradition are demanding that students adopt that.
Right.
But it becomes a focus that allows students to define themselves in support of or in agreement with or in disagreement with and helps them to define their own profile perhaps more clearly. The other thing that we're concerned about and interested in generally is that we think it's generally more helpful to have more different kinds of perspectives brought to bear on a problem than fewer. So just like in the natural world, we talk about biodiversity, keeping the biological diversity of the planet alive, there's a sense in which theodiversity or theological diversity is important to maintain, not as a means of arguing against each other, but because our different theological traditions give us different lenses for looking at the world, different perspectives at looking at the world, and that can help other people see things, too, that they might not see out of their own tradition or own perspective.
Very good. One last question. You come from psychology and from history, both fields with deep history and rich roots, but neither are theologically based. And so I wonder, how has your research helped you talk about religion in view of the philosophy or the psychology courses that you teach or the history courses that you teach? Has it affected the way you interact with students, the way you interact with colleagues? How has your research shaped that?
I'll just say something about me. I should admit that my master's and PhD is actually from the Divinity School at the University of Chicago. So there is some theology tucked in the past.
Very good.
And even in the present. And in my title, actually, at Messiah College is both church history and theology. So I may be the culprit that's pushed us in this direction. But Rhonda has also taken some seminary courses, but I'll let her
right.
talk about
one of the wonderful parts of my position at Messiah College is that I work with faculty who are new to the institution in identifying their own scholarly task, what they're called to do, and how that relates to who they are as people, including their religious commitments. And that is somewhat theological, but it's also certainly a psychological task. And I feel very fortunate to have found this particular vocation for myself.
Excellent.
Rhonda should also say that she has been studying the relationship between religion and psychology for quite some time and has received a number of awards and grants. Well, this for is her my, work in this that
is,
area.
Here he is. He's turning into a cheerleader.
a cheerleader that's just speaking the truth.
Well deserved. Well, Jake and Rhonda, it's such a pleasure to have you here with us at Pepperdine. Thank you for taking the time talk with us today at Pepperdine People, and we look forward to working with you more over the coming weeks.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.